Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. One person's quest for a kidney donor leads to a possible life-transforming, albeit freaky, relationship on Be Positive, CBS new comedy series Up and Adam this Thursday. Co-star Sally Rue joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. The Queen's Gambit continues to draw kudos from viewers and critics alike. One reason why this network miniseries on Netflix may be headed for a big case of awards in 2021, the work of my guest the next half hour, film editor Michelle Tesoro. She'll join us live from New Mexico. Also ahead, HGTV revives Design Star, a spotlight on Beacon 23, our classic trivia question, and we will have that takeaway of the week that we delayed from last week. Yes, we will. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum. It's coming your way live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, and presented on Amazon Music and the iRadio Podcast Network. This just in, it's pre-election day 2020, and tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the lead provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Good to have you with us on this Monday afternoon, the first Monday of November 2020, for the program all about TV's current and future. 44 windy degrees outside in the New York metro area. Wonderful guests coming your way in the hour and change ahead, and we invite you to get on the horn and be interactive with us. All you got to do is pick up the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Shy about the phone, no problem. Vote with being in our chat room. Sign up with 04 by name, and you'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget, you can also get other people connected to where you are by using Facebook Timeline. Just click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, tune in screen, follow the instructions, other people will be live with you. And Sally Rue from Be Positive on CBS is live with us from Los Angeles after these news notes. One of Hulu's Garden Television's most popular series will be back next year in an updated, coronavirus-minded fashion. Design Star, Next Gen, will again bring contestants together for two top prizes, $50,000 and their own series on HGTV. And this time around, each player will have their own house-sized lab to work their challenges through. Allison Voss will host the six-episode Star Revival, originating from an isolated production space due to coronavirus situation. Well, when Spectrum Originals was formed several years ago, AMC Networks entered into a multi-year co-production agreement with them. That deal will finally bear fruit next year with Beacon 23, a space-bound season created by Ready Player One writer Zach Penn. Spectrum's video-on-demand cable customers will get the first run of Beacon 23 for 9 months. From there, AMC can play the series over any of its services. Beacon 23 takes place at the edge of the universe, involving two people held prisoner in a lighthouse, the showrunner of Star Trek various series fame, Ira Stephen Bear. Now some quickies before our first guest, Bridgerton, Shonda Rhimes' first series under a multi-year deal with Netflix, begins on Christmas Day. From now on, all Emmy Awards for children's programming will be handed out at the daytime ceremony. No more primetime recognition, as decided earlier today by the Television Academy. Taraja P. Henson will host the 2020 American Music Awards November 22nd on ABC. Now more ABC news, former Jeopardy! Mega winners like Ken Jennings and Brad Rutter will take turns as the Beast in a new version of The Chase, the British quiz format having an Emmy-nominated run on GSN from 2013-2015. You may remember Brooke Burns won an Emmy nomination as the host, and Mark Labatt was the Beast. I met him once. He was really great. And GSN will once again dust off Chain Reaction for another go-round next year. This time, the game show reunites with original GSN version host Dylan Lane, of Fuse fame. He was a Chain Master for two seasons, running in 2006 and 2007. Yes, Chain Reaction can't keep that series down, back on GSN next year. And that is news notes for today. Our first guest is as versatile an actress and intelligent as they come. Many of you remember her four-season run as the star of Less Than Perfect on ABC. Some of you may remember her more recent exploits as one of the stars of Netflix's Let Me Snick It, a series of unfortunate events. And now she is the co-star of CBS's new sitcom, their only new series premiering this fall. It's Be Positive, and it premieres this Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time after Young Sheldon. Joining us live from Los Angeles in an interrated system, co-star Sally Rue. Hi, Sally.
Hi, how are you? Thanks so much for having me on.
It is a pleasure to have you. So what has it been like for you and everybody involved with Be Positive to not only be the first CBS new series of the season, but also the first to work under pandemic conditions?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I for one, am just so grateful to have somewhere else to go every day and not, you know, just be surrounded by my children and my husband. I feel very lucky. You know, it's been a challenge to go back to work under new conditions. Normally, when you do a multi-cam comedy, you have an audience to shoot your show in front of. And, of course, given what's going on right now, there's no audience. And so I think that's been the biggest hurdle is you don't have that interaction. You don't have that laughter, that response from people immediately. But I just think we all feel so grateful and lucky to have a job and so thankful that Warner Brothers has made such incredible strides at testing and keeping everybody, the cast and crew, safe that we're just really lucky to be back at work.
Do you find it ironic that this series you're in is a very health-oriented series in several ways in one?
Yes, it is. And I also feel like we might, you know, just given that it's about you know, donating an organ, I am really hopeful that more people might, you know, check that little box on their driver's license and become organ donors because of us when they see, like, you know, you could make a friend for life if you give an organ. Who knows? You don't know what might happen.
Sarah, you've had a very good relationship with Chuck Lorre, the executive producer of this. He's been one of the greatest streaks going in recent years in comedy with The Big Bang Theory, Two and a Half Men, Young Sheldon, Mom, etc. When you got the role to play here, what did he tell you about it? What do you envision for what you're doing?
You know, I have such a small sort of role in the first two episodes, and basically Chuck and Marco Pernette were very emphatic about her not being just your typical sitcom ex-wife who comes in, picks up the kids, they have a contentious relationship, and she leaves. You know, they want so much more from it. And we're just now getting to, as we're a few episodes into the season, starting to explore her and, you know, explore both sides of her and Drew's relationship in terms of their separation and how they are choosing to, like, live their new lives separately, but also because they have a child still together and co-parenting. So he was basically very keen on it not being the standard, you know, divorced wife showing up at the door kind of thing, which I was really excited to hear. And yeah, like you said, I've had the privilege of working with Chuck a lot, and I trust him. I know that he makes good TV and TV that I like watching and my family likes watching, and I was just really excited to be involved in a project like this.
In fact, speaking of the door, you do show up in the first episode at the door. And in fact, I saw the pilot over the weekend, the first episode that people see Thursday on CBS, that it's one of the more dramatic points of that episode. And it's dramatic not only for what you say, but also for what, to quote that famous game show of way back when, you don't say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there's so much to, I mean, as somebody, I've personally been through a divorce, you know, there's a lot to explore, and oftentimes because it's not necessarily like me slapping funny, it's a really difficult situation, and so therefore it's only usually the surface is only scratched, especially in comedies when it comes to two people separating their lives. But that's one thing that Chuck is really, really good at. You know, if you look at shows like Mom, where there's, you know, lots of dramatic undertones to Mom, you know, recovery is not necessarily a funny thing either, but they're able to take kind of a heavy subject and make comedy out of the tragedy. And I think that's, you know, we're going to see a lot more of that in Be Positive, too. So I'm really excited about that.
The series is Be Positive. It is CBS's first new series of the season and their only new series, comedy or otherwise, that will premiere this fall. And it premieres this Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after an episode of Young Sheldon, which is also done by the executive producer of both shows, Chuck Lorre, one of the top comedy producers in television. We have Sarah Rue. She's one of the co-stars of the program. She joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour in an interradio exclusive on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Sign up, I'm going to be live from New York. Delighted to have you with us this pre-election day, Monday, 2020. Hope that you're having a very good Monday wherever you are. Join us live here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and Tune Radio. And be in the conversation with us. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name. Earlier today, Hollywood Reporter gave the new HBO series Industry a spicy good review. And Friday on Tomorrow We Tell Live, when we join you next, we will go live across the Atlantic and we'll speak with the creative and executive producers of this brand new HBO series. Their names are Mickey Down and Conrad Kay. If you like Succession, you probably will like Industry just as much, maybe even more. It's getting great reviews all over the place, and we'll have the creators and executive producers live with us from Britain. That's on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sarah, the basic plot of this is very interesting because you have your ex, played by Thomas Middleditch, formerly of Silicon Valley. Many people may remember him from that popular HBO series. He plays someone who finds out in the first scene that he's got to get a kidney transplant. So he's looking for a donor, and pick it up from there.
Yeah, so he's looking for a donor. One of my, favorite lines is in the pilot is the doctor says to him, you know, don't you have someone you can ask, close friends? And he's like, I don't really have kidney friends. And he's like, what about family? And he's like, no, a Republican kidney? No. So he's looking for a donor and finds runs into a woman that he hasn't seen since high school who kind of has a heart of gold, and it turns out that, you know, they're a match, and she signs up to be his donor. And the show is based on Marco Panett's real-life experience with having a kidney transplant and finding his own sort of unlikely donor and the friendship that he developed with a woman who ultimately donated her kidney to him. So it's a really wonderful, uplifting show, and I feel really grateful, especially in such a difficult time, like right now in the world, if you have to promote a TV show in such a heavy time, it's really wonderful to be able to talk about something that is as uplifting and positive as Be Positive happens to be.
And I'll tell you, if you have not heard of Marco Panett, you ought to, because now he's the creator of this show. He has done a lot of great work over the years, his own series like Caroline in the City, but also he was one of the key executive producers of Ugly Betty with America Ferrari, which did so well on ABC, based on the popular Spanish-language miniseries and telenovela. So, and I think he does some wonderful work in this. And the thing about Marco's writing, at least from this opening episode, Sarah, is that he's able to balance a couple of things. He's able to balance the relationship between these two people, played by Thomas, and by a wonderful star named Annalee Ashford, who, if you don't know her, you ought to, especially those of you maybe in New York because she's a popular Broadway musical star. More about her in a second. And also, there's a couple of subplots here. There's your subplot, which is your relationship to your ex-husband. But there's also this very interesting relationship with this woman and the seniors that she buses every day on the job. And I think that's one of, I think it's one of the surprising things of that pilot. And I'm curious how that's going to play out in future episodes.
Yeah, I mean, they are very much, there's two main actors who are going to be in the show. And I don't know if I'm supposed to reveal that, but in the pilot, Bernie Coppell is one of them, and you may remember him as the doctor from The Love Boat, amongst many, many other things in his career. And yeah, it is really wonderful to have people of a certain age on TV and represented. And I love the comedy that comes out of it, and there will be a lot more of that in the future too on Be Positive.
Yeah. And this is just to elaborate the point. What I love about the portrayal of the seniors is that they're not set in their ways. It's not stereotypical. These folks have a life. They're fun. They're with it. They're hip. They remind me in many ways of my parents, who are living and being great, and now in New Jersey, they're ready to move to Florida, and they're in their 90s, and they're just super people, and they have a great life. And I think they will really recognize these folks because they just are fun people, and they really get. They're very hip in their own special way. And I think Marco gets that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to be, especially in comedy, you know, all the comedy that I like comes out of reality. And if you have just a bunch of like caricatures of, oh, I'm a, you know, whatever it is that you sort of imagine, I'm a cranky old man and this is all I say, like, that's not interesting at all. You have to have people be full, well-rounded characters. And I think it's wonderful to see, and we don't see it that often on TV.
And by the way, there's also a scene down near the end of the opening episode. It's very slapsticky. I won't give it away, but it's a lot of fun when you see that part. It adds another dimension to the episode. Talk about Anna Leigh Ashford, because she's somebody that is a triple threat, singer, dancer, actress. Broadway people know her from her performances in musicals like Sunny in the Park with George and Kinky Boots. They also know her from the revival recently with James Earl Jones of You Can't Take It With You, the classic Broadway play and musical. She's one of the very, for those who know, she's one of the very few actresses who has been up for a Tony in the musical category and in the play category. She was nominated musical for Kinky Boots. She won for You Can't Take It With You, playing the Ann Miller dancing role. If you remember the movie with Ann Miller and Lionel Barrymore and so forth, that great cast, that Oscar-winning movie. But also they know her in TV from Mask of Sex, the Madison Johnson drama that ran for several seasons on Showtime. We had the creators of the show way back when. This was like 2013, 2014. And I think if you don't know who she is, you'll get to know her very quickly.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think she's so talented. And also, may I say, just like super delightful to be around and work with. You know, we have kids the same age, and we bonded very quickly over that. And then when the pandemic happened and we were quarantined, we quickly realized that when the show was picked up, we would sort of be in a pod because we would be working together and we would be tested a lot. And so our kids now play together all the time, and we have our own sort of little safety toddler zone. She's delightful. She's super talented. She's wonderful in this role. She's just a real team player and really great to be around. I'm from New York. My dad was a Broadway stage manager. I go see a lot of theater. I knew who she was before working with her, but now I've gotten to spend a lot of time with her offset, and she is just as delightful as she is talented.
Well, once all of you got together to start work on Be Positive, how fast is it to develop in these conditions the chemistry? How fast is it to develop the relationships? How fast is it to develop the dynamics of your characters, no matter where they're placed in an episode?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, normally when you're doing a multicam, you all hang out on stage all day. And so some people will go off and rehearse one scene, and then you might sit around and chat with another actor sort of, you know, on the other side of the stage. But because of what's happening right now with coronavirus and the way we are set up to stay as safe as possible, you know, we're masked all day long, and we only take our masks off to quickly rehearse and then put them back on. And then we're basically all asked to then go to our dressing rooms and sit sort of privately when we're not working, just to keep the stage as empty as possible. So it's been interesting having time to get to know people, because it's lessened than it normally is. But luckily for Anna Leigh and I, we do have our kids the same age, and we do spend a lot of time sort of outside, socially distant together, and gotten to know each other. But in terms of the dynamic when we're working, we've fallen into it pretty easily. And I think that's always a good sign for a show. I remember after the first table read of Less Than Perfect on the pilot, Andy Dick said, you know, he was like, oh, you're playing this part? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, I don't know who you are. And I was like, oh, well, that's okay. I'm just an actor. I've been working a lot, but you're not a star. And he was like, okay, well, we'll see. And then after the table read, he was like, oh, this is going to work. Because we all just, either you have chemistry all together or you don't. And I feel like with Be Positive, there's sort of an instant, even though we don't get a lot of time to cultivate our relationships, it just all sort of magically works. We have good chemistry as a cast. And so that's been a really lucky, wonderful thing when we haven't gotten the sort of downtime, normal bonding time that you would normally get.
You're hearing Sarah Rue. She is the co-star of the new CBS sitcom Be Positive. It premieres, positively for sure, this Thursday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after an episode of Young Sheldon. And Sarah joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour in a radio exclusive interview right here, live and lively, on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Abbott with you live from New York, 44 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple, day before Election Day 2020. Lots of wind, but also very, very bright. Wherever you are, we hope it's a great day for you and you're listening and you have a few more minutes with Sarah, so if you have a question or comment, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. A big 90-minute show tomorrow, televised, coming away a week from today. And speaking of CBS, we're going to have John Quinn. He is the executive producer of Let's Make a Deal, going to his second year with that program. And we will be talking to him about the coronavirus changes they have made to the episode, which will premiere in daytime next week. He will be our lead guest. Also coming up, we will have a project that we talked about in a news note about a month or so ago called the Canadian Content Accelerator. It's an opportunity for Canadian-based cable shows or producers to make their way to the United States and beyond. We will have an exclusive interview with one of the Council Generals of Canada. His name is Zaib Shakir. We'll have him, plus we'll have two of the producers he is working with. And finally, Nickelodeon is going very dramatic later this month with the premiere of The Astronauts from Imagine Kids and Family Unit. We'll have the creator executive producer, Daniel Knopf. He'll join us as well. That's all coming up next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Sarah, talk about working with Thomas. This is a different kind of role from what he did in Silicon Valley. In Silicon Valley, he's sort of like a keeper of the culture there. In this case, he's a therapist who's trying to work out how to deal with this kidney situation, and in a way working out with his own mortality and his own way of, like, how does he relate to people?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Thomas is so good in the show. It's mind-blowing. He's quite a force. I've really enjoyed working with him. You know, and Thomas is also a huge improviser, and that really has come in handy on set when there's a moment where it's like, oh, this isn't working. What else have you guys got? And Thomas is so quick, and it's so wonderful to work with someone like that because you can always rely on them to bring the funny. Or I find myself turning to him a lot and going, what do you think? Should we do this? Should we do that? How are you feeling about it? Because I really trust his instincts. That's a real gift. He's great. He's it's kind of crazy how fast he is. I've had a lot of friends who come from, you know, the Second City improv world, but Thomas is kind of like another level of quick, and it's been really great to work with him in that way, because you just can trust that he will always bring the funny, but he also is very aware of the heaviness of the situation for this character at all times. It never gets too big. It never gets unbelievable. It's always just grounded and delicate, and he's crazy compelling to watch.
And he also never gets too heavy or too light. There's sort of like that nice middle ground that he uses voice, he uses his language, his body language and so forth to sort of keep that middle ground going in the face of a number of things he deals with. And we haven't talked about, there's a twist in this episode and a twist in this whole program. We're going to let the audience see it for themselves on Thursday night. I think you're going to find a lot of fun, a twist in the program. But both of you also deal with another character. Now, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was just going to say, I think people are really going to – I think it's such a great show for right now because it's such a feel – there is a feel-good element to the show that you just – I think as an audience member, you can't resist liked and by, and so I really hope people watch. I know it's a crazy time, and I think it might give everybody a nice reprieve from everything that's going on.
And I do want to point out, even though it deals with searching for a kidney transplant, it is not a gross show. I want to be very, very clear about that.
No.
It is family friendly. It is not.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to let my older daughter watch. This is the first time I let her watch a little bit of Series of Unfortunate Events because that was four kids. But this is really the first time I've been on a show that I have been totally fine with letting her watch, and I'm excited to kind of show her what I do.
By the way, how did you like the experience of doing genre television with Lemony Snicket?
It was incredible. I loved it so much. I mean, just working with, you know, Neil Patrick Harris, and I, you know, spent a lot of time with Nathan Fillion. We were paired up for much of season two on Series of Unfortunate Events. I loved the hair and the makeup, and the best part of it, though, for me, was getting to work with Barry Sonnenfeld, who I was always a big fan of. You know, he directed, like, the Men in Black movies and Adam's Family. Like, he's just an incredibly talented guy. And it's such a gift to, as an actor, to get to work with a director who has such a clear vision. He knows exactly what he wants. He's able to communicate it perfectly. And I loved it. I just thought it was so wonderful. And now that it's, you know, on Netflix and people are still watching it, it is so fun, because I've never been on a show that kids were supposed to watch before. And so to have a bunch of, like, 12-year-olds come up to you somewhere and want to talk to you about the show, it's a really, really cool thing. I really loved it.
Before we go, there's two other people I want to get to, because both you and Thomas and your character also have a daughter. And I think she may be, I'm not sure if she's a new face of television, but talk about both of you working with her.
Yeah, she's great. Her name's Izzy G, and she was actually on a show with RuPaul on Netflix. This is her first foray into maybe sort of like four camera comedy. And she's been great so far. It's funny, normally at this point in the season, we would have shot maybe like ten episodes, but because of what getting pushed back with the pandemic and quarantine, we've only shot like a handful of episodes. So we've only been going for a short time. So we're really making these shows almost as you guys are watching them. So we're all still getting to know each other. But it's nice for me. I'm a mom in real life, so I feel like her TV mom, and it's nice to have her on set, and I like having somebody kind of, you know, to look out for. It's fun, and she's a real sweetie.
For sure. And before we all go, there's somebody else we need to talk about, and we definitely need to talk about her right now, because it's her birthday, and that is your co-star, Kevin Donahue, who plays a friend of Anna Lee. So, happy birthday. First of all, I saw the Facebook posting. We were not going to let it go by. So please, Sarah, give our best to Kevin on her birthday. Great new year, great new decade ahead for her, along with everybody in the crew. And I look like working with Kevin, because she's a talent. I think she's going to – she comes up in one scene in this, but I think you're going to hear a lot more from her.
Yeah, she was on You're the Worst. For people who maybe don't recognize her name, she was on You're the Worst, which was on FX for many years, and she played the friend character on that. And, oh, she's great. She's a total hoot. Again, it's like such a bummer that we're all sort of relegated to our dressing rooms to throw our masks on every time we're done working, because I think we'd all be hanging out and, you know, having tacos and, you know, chilling on the weekends. But it's just not the world we're living in right now. But she's really delightful, and I think she would agree with me and say we're all just really grateful that Warner Brothers and CBS have found a way to make it safe for us to work, because we're getting to do a show that we all believe in and we, you know, think people will really enjoy. So we're happy we get to make it.
Be Positive, created by Marco Pinette and based on his own life, and a very great life it is, by the way, too, and with a great cast. And executive produced by Chuck Lorre, and I used to say in the 1950s, produced by Warner Brothers. It all starts this Thursday on CBS, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after an episode of Young Sheldon, also produced by Mr. Lorre. Check out listening to the CBS station in your area. For more details about the program online, go to CBS.com. And one thing I want to remind you, that next Monday, we'll have among our guests, John Quinn from Let's Make a Deal. We should let you know that tonight at 8 o'clock, the new Price is Right at Night will be premiering the first of their six episodes that will be done under coronavirus conditions. And they, like Let's Make a Deal, will also start their new daytime season next week. And John Quinn will be with us for Let's Make a Deal next Monday as well. Sarah Rue, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations to you and everybody involved for getting Be Positive on the air. I have a hunch it's going to be a very wonderful run.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, and I really appreciate you taking the time to promote the show.
It is a pleasure, Sarah. All the greatest to you and everybody. Take care.
Bye. Thank you.
Sarah Rue, co-star of Be Positive on CBS, joining us live from Los Angeles. More than Harvey Televised coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks from our sponsor, Audible.com. If you're a John Grisham fan, hey, he's got a new audiobook ready for you. It's called The Time for Mercy. It's another legal drama, and it's a good one, and you can get it right now for the trial run to Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information, inspiration as well, too. Over 200,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Block Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, IR Radio, Media Village 2, etc. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, some health and wellness information free of charge, a 1 month trial, also gratis, and of course, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And get this, if you're an Amazon Prime customer already, make that two audiobooks you get to your trial, including one of the growing catalog of Audible Originals. That's original audio productions, the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one-person shows. And incidentally, if you sign up, you can get a trial, get a run for Audible.com for the first few months at only $4.95 a month, reduced price from normal. So make sure you check that out in your decision. So if you want to hear how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world and have it be something maybe as a gift for post-Halloween and this upcoming holiday season for you or someone you love, just go to audibletrial.com/televised. When we come back, another great reason why The Queen's Gambit is doing so great on Netflix, Bill and Michelle Sorrell will join us live from New Mexico, and we'll have our classic trivia question of the week and our takeaway that we were supposed to have last week today. That's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected with the best internet radio in the galaxy, www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, together reaching over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, TuneIn Radio is your home for the Coronavirus News Channel. Check it out for ongoing reports about what's going on with this pandemic all over the world, plus podcasts and other special material. The Coronavirus News Channel, up and going 24/7. TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. Welcome back to More Tomorrow Be Televised on this pre-election day 2020. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. If you have questions or comments for our next guest, make the phone ring 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Before the top of the hour, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week. And you know, if you are the first with the correct answer, you can win Hitman, the acclaimed book about legendary music producer David Foster, published by Pocket Books. So stay tuned. You might be our next winner, but you got to listen and then play in for the win. Last week, we brought you an exclusive interview with one of the key executive producers of The Queen's Gambit, Bill Holberg. The Queen's Gambit being the Netflix original miniseries that is getting sensational reviews all over the place, both viewers and critics. And a lot of people think it's going to be one of the slam dunk nominees for the Emmy Awards as well as the Peabody Award next year. Well, my next guest had a lot to do with the making of that terrific miniseries. She was the film editor from start to finish. Joining us live from near Albuquerque, New Mexico, Michelle Tesoro. Michelle, thanks for coming aboard.
Thanks for having me, Simon.
It is a pleasure. When Bill was on our show last Wednesday, he had a lot of great things to say about you and that you had a big role to play in how the show ended up. What do you make of your work on Queen's Gambit?
I think I'm really proud of it. I think that, you know, when I first read the scripts, I sort of saw it as a real challenge editorially, you know, just to make the chess exciting, but also to be able to tell the story in the way that it felt when I read it, which means when I read it, it felt like the story was really moved and I was really into the characters. And, you know, so for me, that was a challenge to try to show it the way that it made me feel when I read that and when I read the book.
Did you know that Bill was the producer on Searching for Bobby Fischer, which he really believes was an inspiration in a way for this miniseries?
I did know that, but I didn't meet him and I didn't know him until Scott brought me in. So, and I know that Bobby, Searching for Bobby Fischer is also about Bruce, who is our child consultant, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. And Scott, we should say, is Scott Frank, who is the writer-director of The Queen's Gambit. And you have worked with him before. This was not a new partnership, a new relationship.
Correct. Scott and I met. We did a pilot together for effects that didn't go called Hoke, and which is based on a character of Hoke Mosley. And that was our first go-around together. And then the second time we worked together, we did Godless, which was our 7-part Western.
And both of these programs deal with female protagonists. In the case of Godless, it was a female-oriented Western. In the case of Queen's Gambit, it's a female protagonist who wants to be the great chess champion of America and ultimately the world. Did you see some connection between the two that you wanted to emphasize in your editing on Queen's Gambit?
No, I didn't. I mean, I think the common denominator there is just Scott, you know, and what Scott picks in terms of his projects. You know, I think this story was there before, obviously, with the Walter Tevis novel, and, you know, which just sort of appealed to me. I mean, I will always work with Scott on his projects, but I like the idea of talking about highlighting a character who is basically one amongst others who aren't like her, who are not like herself. You know, I very much identified with her.
Mm-hmm. Usually in episodic television, miniseries, you rarely have one film editor doing everything, all the episodes, start to finish. Sometimes you'll have some do a batch, you'll have others do a batch. Sometimes you'll divide, in a miniseries, you'll divide up different episodes. What do you like better, the ability to do one project start to finish or work with other film editors to create a cohesive whole?
I think I really like doing the being the one and just seeing the whole show through because it has a continuity and mood and feel. But, you know, there is a benefit to having other minds on it and being able to learn from other people, you know, as I did on When They See Us. But, you know, I do, you know, the way that I work with Scott, which is how I'm able to do all of them is, you know, we are all working on it as if it is one long movie. So there's sort of, it's just the nature of how they shoot it, how it's written, and ultimately how we cut it is just sort of the same way. But I do prefer that because it gives me a lot of things to do. So
when you have that kind of relationship going in with Scott, because you've worked with him before, how fast do you get the film to edit, and how long does it take, let's say, to do this kind of a project where you know the person going in and you have a good relationship, a good chemistry here, versus, let's say, doing a project where you don't know the director or the writer or the producer as much?
This, I would say, it kind of takes a similar amount of time. It's just the amount of confidence you have for the cut that you're turning over, you know? And so I think, and also the way that Scott and I work, and because we're already familiar with each other, is there's already a lot of communication about what he wants, what his expectations are, you know, even before he shoots. And so I think once I get the film, which, you know, and this is the same for every project, as you get it as daily as, you know, the next day after they've shot it, you know, I already have in mind how it's supposed to go. So it's a lot easier to know which performances are the best, how the cut is supposed to play out. And, you know, a lot of times he'll shoot and he'll tell me at the end of the day, oh, you know, we did it this way. So, you know, he'll guide me a little bit about what he wants. And sometimes he'll call and say, well, it didn't go as I planned, so good luck. but I think he trusts me, and that's what makes it fun, is because I feel like it's, as he likes to say, when we work together, it's 1 and 1 equals 3.
We are speaking with Michelle Tesoro, and she is the film editor behind The Queen's Gambit, which is getting rave reviews as one of the best miniseries, not just of this fall or of 2020, but of this fall or this season, but this entire year, 2020. And a lot of people think in 2021 is going to get a lot of Emmy nominations and maybe the Peabody Award and some other awards as well. A nice little treasure chest for this unique Netflix miniseries. Michelle joined us live from near Albuquerque, New Mexico, this half hour. On Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Good you're with us as well. Simon Atman with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A., New York, on this pre-election day 2020. If you have a question or a comment for Michelle, well, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Remember, coming up on Friday, we will preview the new HBO series, Industry. A lot of people think if you love Succession, you'll love Industry just as much, maybe more. We'll go across the Atlantic and speak with creators and executive producers Mickey Down and Conrad Kay. Exclusive interview coming your way Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, only on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Between Godless and The Queen's Gambit, you worked on what turned out to be the miniseries of last year, Ava DuVernay's When They See Us. Won the Peabody Award, won the Emmy for Best Miniseries. Jerome became a star overnight for his performance. What was it like to work on such a powerful miniseries?
Well, it really, I felt very lucky to be telling such an important story. And, I mean, the actors were just incredible. So I really also like to be able to work with their footage and also with Ava, who had very strong ideas about what, you know, how she wanted the series to be like and what she wanted out of it. And it really felt like I was kind of doing my in society for whatever that's worth. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you are working with a miniseries that in fiction is trying to bring over a truth out of an actual incident, mm-hmm. in this case the Central Park 5 mm-hmm. situation, compared to mm-hmm. a story made for TV like Queen's Gambit or a story like Goddess, which is set in the female-oriented West, is there mm-hmm. more responsibility to make it work as opposed to a different situation like Queen's Gambit or Godless?
I mean, I think so. I think you want to highlight it in the best possible light and really be able to represent the boys the way they want to be represented. So, and also to be clear about what the purpose of the show is, which, you know, was to exonerate them and to show why they were exonerated.
Going back to Queen's Gambit, everyone is talking about Anya, the lead role in this.
Hmm.
When we do film editing, did she have any input in, like, use this take or use this part of the scene kind of thing? Or do you do a lot of work with when a program that is, like, basically a one-actor, one-actress dominated series or miniseries, that they have more input in what you do?
No, I don't think so. I mean, she definitely, in this particular case, she did not have input in terms of editorial or takes. And I haven't been on a project that was like that. Maybe the closest might have been on House of Cards. You know, they only get input if they have an executive producer sort of role as well, if they're producing the show. So in that case, I think, you know, Kevin Spacey was an executive producer and sometimes gave notes, but they're not there to tell you, you know, what take, you know, and these actors are very, you know, Anya did such a wonderful job that, you know, there was so much to choose from to try to put this character together the way that we wanted to, that, you know, it was a collaboration, even if we weren't speaking.
By the way, on a miniseries or on a series, whatever the project is, how do you and the cinematographer, whoever that is, what kind of relationship develops in the course of editing your film?
I mean, usually, you know, oftentimes there really is no relationship. I mean, unless you've worked on multiple shows with somebody, you don't really get an opportunity. And that's usually because editorial is sort of physically separate from production most of the time, so you don't have an opportunity to go to set all that much. I mean, it's kind of up to you working together. I mean, in this case with Steven Meisler, I do get to interact with him a lot. We talk a lot about, you know, what our expectations are from the show, you know, what we think about, you know, he sort of gives his input in general, you know, after we've come up with a cut, you know, we get to see it and sort of comment. Actually, you know, when we're shooting, and I know that we did this for Godless, is I was there during when we shot the battle. You know, I had a lot of, you know, I could see what they were doing. I could see what his intentions were. He could be there and ask me what would be the best way to how it would cut well better together, whatever, you know. But, you know, generally the people who, you know, all roads lead to the director, and that's our connection, you know, what trying to give him what he wants.
What is your philosophy, Michelle, about when to edit and when not to edit? Let me give an example. One of my favorite miniseries of all time was George Wallace. The miniseries done by John Frankenheim was starring Gary Sinise as George Wallace, the controversial presidential candidate. And near the end of the movie, there is a scene where George, in a wheelchair, speaks before a congregation to basically ask for forgiveness for all of the bad things he's done for the African-American community. And from the moment that he gets on that podium to the moment he stops the speech, the camera has a headshot or mid-shot of him speaking. There's no cutaways.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that sometimes there would be a reaction shot from somebody in the crowd or a reaction shot from somebody in the pews. None. It's him, start to finish, speaking, and then there's a reaction shot. And it makes you wonder that Frankenheimer seemed to have this feeling of when you let a camera roll and when not to, or when to edit something and when not to. So I'm curious if that ever comes up where you have to make a judgment call about here's where I should let the camera roll and here's where I don't, here's where I edit and where I don't.
I mean, that is always something that I'm thinking about all the time. I prefer, my particular philosophy is if the less cuts, the better. Or cut when there is an intention. So, you know, in that case, I don't know what choices there were for that show, but I know for us, you know, we do have these moments where we're really cutting forward, we're really moving, and then we stop, and we're staying on a shot, and it's either designed that way by Meisler, or we're deciding to stay there for performance or because that's what the scene needs. So I always kind of try to decide what does it need? What do they shoot? And what do the actors give us that could be gold and we don't want to let go, and what they're doing in this one shot, if we're going to stay in one shot, is that the essence of the scene? And do we need to cut? That's always a question that I ask myself.
Yeah. Did Anya's performance, the intensity of the performance, especially when she's in those chess matches where you, like, have to determine, like, what is my next move going to be, did that also have an impact on where and when?
I mean, yes. You know, I think there is a lot of performance in her eyes, even if she doesn't like do them, because they're so large and evoke so much emotion. And I think it's one of those things where you have to be careful, because with her, a little goes a long way. So you have to be very, you have to choose which of those moments that she gives you to highlight and to tell the story that you're trying to tell for that particular match. And, you know, what's so great about it is, like, you know, the match itself is so still. Well, I guess it depends, and you're not watching speed chess, but if you're in, like, you know, a normal match, it gives you more than if you didn't have it.
Because one of the some of the reviews had this word to say about it, and I think it speaks well to her and to you, that the performance was magnetic, riveting. And again, it comes out of both the intensity of her performance, but also the intensity of how you treat the film and how the cinematographer works and how you work. So it really is a tribute to what both of you have done to make that performance shine even more.
Thank you.
Michelle DeSoro, the film editor on The Queen's Gambit, one of Netflix's most important miniseries sensations of recent years. She's with us live from Albuquerque, New Mexico, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And if you have a question or comment or many minutes with her, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. By the way, coming up a week from Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we have a very exciting, another Netflix segment for you. On November 11th, Veterans Day, Netflix will premiere one of its most unique programs ever. It is an animated program called The Liberator. It's a World War II drama. It's a very unusual format in an animated hour-long drama, and it's one that involves very real, lifelike animation through a special new process which was put together by a studio out of Atlanta, Georgia. We will have a very unusual three-way segment on the show. You'll meet from Ireland the writer and showrunner of the program, Jeb Stewart. You'll meet the head of A&E Studios, which put it together, Barry Johnson. And you'll also meet the executive producer from the studio, Trioscope, that made it happen, L.C. Chad Crowley. That's all coming up a week from Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And again, The Liberator will premiere, the four-part miniseries, will premiere on Netflix November 11th, Veterans Day. Michelle, how did you get into film editing? What was your entree?
Well, you know, I went to film school, but I decided to go to film school because I just loved watching movies, and that's all I did when I was younger. But when I went to film school, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I thought I was going to be into camera, and, you know, I went to NYU, and they allow you to kind of dabble in different in different things, like you could do cinematography, you could do directing, you could do documentary, and I kind of tried a bunch of different stuff, and the editing part of it, I seem to be either better than most at it, and I felt that I understood it more, and it interested me more than the other crafts.
Hmm. What do you think about your track record? The fact you've been able to be involved in so many major programs, Godless, When They See Us, now this Queen's Gambit, House of Cards, the first major Netflix series ever. That is a pretty impressive list of credits.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think I had a really good lucky run in the beginning. I feel like I was connected to the right people at the right time at the beginning of my career, and those shows didn't last so long, so I was able to move on to new things and meet new people and expand my network, which is where I draw from, you know, to this day. So, and also, I mean, I kind of learned a little early on in my career, it's really important that when you're choosing to go on to something, when you're at that point in your career, you have a choice, that you choose projects based on, you know, relationships and also, you know, really good scripts, you know, because there's only so much you can do in editing. So, and I always really like to be able to choose not only something that was really well written, if I have the choice of the matter, but also, you know, a story that kind of, that has a place in the current vernacular of society. You know, what is it doing? You know, how will it reflect my values, and what does it say about me and say about the time? So, but I feel like I've also been very lucky.
Do you have any role models in the world of film editing, people in that world you look up to, past or present?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I really love the work of Sally Mankey. May she rest in peace. I didn't know her personally, but, you know, watching Reservoir Dogs was one of the first movies that I saw. I think I was 15, 16, and that's when I kind of thought a movie, I realized a movie was a movie in a different way, you know, and why did this movie affect me so much, even though it was, you know, it's kind of a heist drama, right? I look up to her, just her work, and I also, you know, I have a lot of colleagues that I've worked with, you know, Sydney Walensky, who was a longtime Sopranos editor. I worked with him on House of Cards. You know, we're friends, and we talk a lot, and he really gives me, you know, I show him everything I do, and he gives feedback, and really difficult, harsh feedback that I need, and that Queen's Gambit was no exception. And yeah.
By the way, before we wrap, two people in film editing that one in film and one in TV, I hope will at some point get a retrospective. One is George Tomasini, who was Alfred Hitchcock's film editor on many of his best movies in the 50s, who worked with a great cinematographer, Robert Burks. That was a great team. Burks, Tomasini, Bernard Herrmann, on all of his movies, most of his movies in the 50s. I think he does not get a lot of credit for what he did. Even though it's Hitchcock movies like Vertigo and North by Northwest and Rear Window and so forth. And the other, whose work you can see now in TV, is a man named Aaron Nibley, who worked with the great producer Herbert B. Leonard, Burt Leonard on Naked City and then later on Route 66. His work on both shows was really marvelous.
I'll have to check
and,
that out.
More great stuff. And you can see it on YouTube, I'm happy to say, both series. So, Michelle, what's next for you? Is Scott Frank picked up the phone to you and said, hey, our new project in the works, let's team up for a third time? If not, where do you see your career going?
You know, I don't know. I'm actually at a crossroads right now where I'm trying to really take a break and think about where I'm going to next. You know, the show in the last, well, I want to say the last few years since Godless, I've really worked, you know, really hard and put my time into it, and you know, to decide on what to do next, I don't know. It really takes a commitment in your life, so it has to be something important. And there's a lot of really good things that are out there, but it's hard to decide what you're going to commit to for another year. So right now, I'm just chilling out. I think Scott is too. I know we're going to do something together again. We've talked about it, but it probably won't be for a little bit.
All right. We will leave it there. Anyway, Queen's Gambit, if you haven't seen it, do check it out. I have a hunch it will be getting a lot of Emmy nominations and maybe a Peabody Award around this time next year. And if you haven't seen the show, here's where you go online and see it on Netflix, www.netflix.com. It's www.netflix.com. Netflix is available on most smart TV sets, smart devices, and in some cases through your local cable operator. The Queen's Gambit, if you haven't seen it, do. It's one of this year's best programs, period. Michelle DeSoto, the film editor on the series, thank you again for joining us. Congratulating you and everybody involved in making that. Also, congratulations on your work with When They See Us and Godless, your work with Scott Frank. And hopefully, we go from here the very, very best. It's been a delight having you on.
Thank you, Simon. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
You too, Michelle. All the greatest. Take care. Enjoy.
You best. Bye.
Michelle DeSoto, film editor on The Queen's Gambit from Netflix, joining us live from near Albuquerque, New Mexico. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. Second week in a row we are offering it, and if you know the answer, you could win Hitman, 40 years making music, topping charts, and winning Grammys, the best-selling book of legendary music producer David Foster, published by Pocket Books. We answered the question a week ago, no winner yet. Let's see if we do this week, and here's that question. And of course, it's music-oriented. What year did the Grammy Awards go live on television? What year, looking for the year, did the Grammy Awards go live on television? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, when you put the answer down in email, include your name and your mailing address. If you win, we get the prize out to you as soon as possible. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's the UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, if you've already won before, and a lot of people have, give somebody else a chance to do it. It'll make their day and yours really, really great. All right? SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's how you play in to win. And if you do, all the very best. When we come back, that takeaway of the week we promised you last Friday, we're finally going to do it, about the new free agency in television and how it will impact your viewing of the medium. And we'll also have our annual Election Day thought. But first, before us, at the top of the hour, for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio in the planet, Kalana 2. That's www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, together reaching over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home for your Health and Nutrition Monday. That's right, your Health and Nutrition Monday. Tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, great health and wellness news. Great guests, too, in that field. Your Health and Wellness, Health and Nutrition Monday. That's your Health and Nutrition Monday, tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR speaker 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of Tomorrow Sunday on this pre-election day, Monday, 2020. Signing off, I'm with you live from New Weber, New York. 44 degrees at the top of the hour. Welcome to those who are just joining us at the top of the hour. We have some wonderful guests in the last hour. Sarah Rue from the new CBS series, Be Positive, and Justin Michel Tesoro, the film editor on The Queen's Gambit, the Netflix hit miniseries. Well, usually on Friday, we started this segment a couple months ago called The Takeaway of the Week, and that is where we give you an event that happened during the course of the week that we think you should take away from as something that could impact in the future the way you watch and use television. Well, we're going to have this takeaway last Friday on our last episode, but because in our final half hour, it's a 90-minute episode, we had a wonderful conversation with the people behind the Showtime documentary premiering that night called Citizen Bio, about the controversial process of biohacking. The subject was so engrossing, and it went in some very exciting directions, including dealing with the possibility of a coronavirus pandemic vaccine that actually one of these biohackers is actually trying on that on himself or herself, that we went way over time. So we're going to bring you that takeaway of the week from Friday today. You know, if you watch sports on television, when you're not watching games, the big topic that usually comes up is what we call free agency. You know, players in pro basketball, pro football, baseball, hockey, other pro sports, deciding it's time to test the waters elsewhere. For whatever reason that they deal with their team, they decide time to go elsewhere, so I'm going to test the waters and see if I can get more, get a better contract, a more multi-year contract, et cetera, et cetera. Well, thanks to what's been going on the last few months, including last week, we are seeing an incredible free agency market of top television executives. We're talking people who have run networks, people who have run empires, people who have been responsible for different aspects of a programming service, all at the same time in this marketplace. And it's all happened because of the reorganization of Netflix, the reorganization of NBC Universal, the recent reorganization of Disney and Warner Media and Viacom CBS. Just some of the people that are in this marketplace. The former head of TBS, TNT, and True TV, Kevin Riley. The former head of NBC and, more recently, HBO Max, Bob Greenblatt. The former head of programming at Disney Plus, Alice Chu. The former second in command at Netflix to Ted Sarandos in programming. And a very highly regarded person, Cindy Holland. Not to mention the former head of comedy there and the former head of original programs there. All out of Netflix and on the free marketplace. Not to mention other people from NBC Universal that have recently or will soon be getting the axe to become a part of this marketplace. And more recently, Mark DeWebwar, the former head of CBS All Access and his parent CBS Interactive, he was let go early last week to now become a free agent. And then last Wednesday, there was a case of Mark Juris. Known Mark for a long time. Mark, way back when, was one of the key people behind the transition, some would say transformation, of American movie classics from a classic movie channel up against Turner Classic Movies to a place to find more recent movies and original programming like Mad Men and Breaking Bad. And then he became the person behind True TV and converted that network from a court TV channel to a home for offbeat comedy like Impractical Jokers and The Carbonaro Effect and Timona and Tacoma PD, etc. And then he got into WeTV the last 7 years, taking that from a Lifetime competitor for women's programming to another home for offbeat, unscripted programming. Series like Growing Up Hip Hop, Life After Lockup, Bridezillas, and Marriage Boot Camp. On Wednesday, Mark Joyce announced that he would become, at the end of this year, another player in the free agency marketplace that television is forming. And he said that he would like to develop his talent for storytelling in a whole different direction from what he has done the last 7 years with WeTV. The separation sounded amicable. In many cases, elsewhere it is not. And what you have is this incredible array of super talent that is all on the marketplace at the same time. And I'll tell you, it's going to be really fun to see where all these people end up, because they got all sorts of options in front of them. Owning their own production company, starting their own network, or hooking up with one of the mega programming services, whether it's BET Plus, Apple TV Plus, what is now CBS All Access, and early next year will be Paramount Plus, or maybe join up with this multitude of new programming services that we have highlighted over the last 5 or 6 months that are distributed over smart TV sets and smart devices. Or maybe be involved with those networks that are being distributed to smart TV sets and devices through middleman companies like Cinedigm, Juking Media, and others. So far, nobody's getting a clue where these folks are going to end up. And that's the fun thing. And that's what you should watch. That's what you should take away from this. Because all these people have one thing in common. They're not ready to retire. They're not ready to go, as they say, gentle into that good night. They want another act in television. They want another shot. And I think it's going to be a terrific time over the next few months to learn where they're going to ultimately go. And no matter where they end up, one thing I can promise you, they will have a major new role on the television you see or the television you don't. So keep your eye on these people. Keep your eye on this new free agency market. And as I said, there'll be more to come because there are some more people who will be laid off from NBC Universal and other places, other mega companies, in the next few weeks. If you're into free agency, apart from sports, this is your kind of fun. Before we wrap things up with one final extended comment, a couple of random thoughts. First of all, you should know, in case you don't, that you can now catch our Tomorrow We Televise podcast at MediaVillage.com. That's the website that I write columns for on a regular basis. In fact, there's a column that was posted earlier today about diversity at News Nation, the WGN America primetime 3-hour news program that you can catch every night on that channel. It's about diversity on and off camera and how it really has impacted the quality of the news coverage and the quality of the program. I hope you get a chance to look at it. It's now available to you at www.mediavillage.com. And while you're there, check out Tomorrow We Televise podcast. Many of our recent episodes over the last month are now there, and others will be there as we continue. So I hope you tune in. And if you are tuning us in right now at mediavillage.com, I'd like to hear what you hear about our program. So email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. Also find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, follow me on LinkedIn. Love to hear from you. Your thoughts are really appreciated because we say at the end of every show, what you say matters. And I do respond to your thoughts, by the way, within 24 hours or less. So check out Media Village. Also, check out Media Village for the great variety of original reporting you will find there, from Jack Myers, from Charlene Weiser, Jeff Minsky, who we featured on this program, Ed Martin, the main TV critic, and a whole lot of other fun folks. MediaVillage.com, available 24/7 for you. Secondly, in case you did not hear the news earlier today in Good Morning America, Jeannie Mai, the co-host of The Real, who was a contestant on Dancing with the Stars, had to remove herself from the competition because she found out that she had a throat issue that she needed immediate surgery on. So at this moment, I believe she's in a hospital recovering from that surgery. I've known Jeannie for quite a while. I met her a couple of times here in New York when she was doing Fashion Week coverage for Style, the late and for me lamented trend in fashion art-oriented service that was by the producer of E. And I've known her work on The Real. I've enjoyed her work for years. We had her on this program in regards to one of the shows she was working on way back when. So, Jeannie, if you hear this, get well soon. Get well powerfully. We want you back soon. You did really great on Dancing with the Stars this season so far, and we hope they have you back. And no matter what, next time you come to New York, you want a ballroom dance, you got it. So, Jeannie, all the very best, and we send you our great, great wishes for a speedy recovery. Every time we do a program on the day before Election Day, it comes with a closing comment. And the comment is very simple. Tomorrow, no matter who is up for election or re-election, whether it is the presidency of these United States or Congress or state officials or referendums on the ballot, that you exercise your right to vote. It's an incredible right you have. And as we say all the time, every year on this program, there are people in this world who are fighting and dying as we speak for what you have the opportunity to do tomorrow. They don't have it, you do. This year, especially this year, given this coronavirus pandemic, I want to add an additional thought. When you exercise your right to vote, do it in person tomorrow. Don't do it by mail. Don't wait for the other person to do it. Don't wait for the other person to mail the ballot. Go out in person and vote. Because chances are that where you vote, it will be a facility that will deal with the coronavirus powerfully. You'll be able to social distance yourself. You come with a mask. I know that they will clean the voting machines up over and over and over again. From the time before people are allowed to enter the polling place to the time they leave. If I could make the point to allow you to vote, to encourage you, to empower you to vote in person, it's this. We as a nation have the incredible opportunity to show the rest of the world that we will not let a virus dictate how we live life. We can send a message tomorrow to the rest of the world that we can live a powerful life, that we are unstoppable when it comes to determining the future of this nation, no matter who ends up being the winner. And the way to do it is to vote in person. So one more time, I encourage you to exercise your right to vote and vote in person. And if you can, encourage other people to join you to exercise their right in person. The more the merrier. And the more the impact. And let's be unstoppable rather than be scared. Let's show the rest of this world that we have what it takes to dictate how this country is run, and that we all can make a difference together. And the way you make a difference is you don't do it by mail. You do it in person. You take the initiative, and you'll be unstoppable. And one more time, if you're thinking otherwise, remember, there are people in this world who are fighting and dying for the right that you have the chance to exercise tomorrow. They don't have it. You do. Use it. And then see your vote count. Again, I want to thank our guest, Sarah Rue from the new CBS series, Be Positive. Don't forget that series premieres Thursday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local CBS station, right after an episode of Young Sheldon. And Michelle DeSoro, the film editor on The Queen's Gambit, which you can see now on Netflix on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. More details about Be Positive, CBS.com. For more details about The Queen's Gambit, www.netflix.com. Don't forget, Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll go live to England and speak with the creative executive producers of the new HBO series Industry that premieres later this month. Nikki Down and Conrad Kay will be with us. And one week from today on our program, we'll focus on a very new venture that will have a lot of impact, I think, on what you watch, the Canadian Content Accelerator. We will have an exclusive interview with one of the council generals of that country, Zaik Sherib. And we'll also have two of the producers that he is working with to make this accelerator venture happen. We'll also have the creator and executive producer of the new Nickelodeon drama, The Astronaut, Daniel Knauss. And from Let's Make It Eagle, executive producer John Quinn will talk about the new season that will be starting next week on CBS in daytime. Don't forget also that tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, the new set of Price is Right Night specials done under coronavirus conditions will premiere at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, hosted by Drew Carey on your local CBS station. And once again, coming up a week from Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, from the new Netflix series, The Liberator, the writer-showrunner Jeb Stuart live from Ireland, the executive producer and head of A&E Studios, Barry Johnson, and from Atlanta, the executive producer from Trioscope, the animation studio that made this series possible, L.C. Chad Crowley. That's all coming up a week from Friday, 3 days from New Pacific here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And stay with us all month long because we have a lot of great people coming up that we're working on. Also, don't forget that Thanksgiving week we'll have our annual tradition of 3 episodes back to back to back. That's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of Thanksgiving week right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. If you came in late on today's episode or want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And you can also check us out anytime you like on podcasts. We're available on Amazon Music, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at iHeartRadio.com, TuneIn.com, Spreaker Podcast, Apple TV, and also on MediaVillage.com. And we want to hear from you. What do you think about our episode today? What's your thoughts about where you stand on the world of television now and in the future? Well, love to hear from you, and I do respond in 24 hours, so let it rip. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. If you're getting into our Classic Trivia Question of the Week, enclose your email address, your mailing address, and your name so that if you win the prize, we can get that prize out to you as soon as possible. We'd also like to hear from you about another regular feature that we do here on the program, and that's a show to know. Is there a TV show you like that doesn't get enough attention? Well, we want to give it attention, and we want to hear from you. And when we do, if we use your suggestion on the air, you get the credit. So again, it's simonapple04@yahoo.com. We're waiting to hear from you. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. At Facebook, it's Simon Applebaum. We have over 1,000 people following. And on Twitter, it's at UBC Simon TWT. Over 730 people now joining us regularly with my Twitter feed with up-to-the-minute news and a whole lot more of the world of television. That's UBC Simon TWT. UBC Simon TWT. Remember, however you communicate with us, it's all appreciated, and it's all respected, and we do respond. Why? Because, as always, what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate is Mandolin. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. The co-founders of this enterprise are Alan Levy and Bob Charish. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought today by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For 1 or 2 free audiobooks, plus health and wellness material and more, and that 1 month trial with great customer service, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Remember, it makes a great holiday season gift, so be prepared for you or someone you love. It's a wonderful gift to have, and it lasts a lifetime. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Please get out and exercise your right to vote tomorrow. Have a great rest of your Election Day week. We are back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Club Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and make it great, and let's lift this pandemic now and forever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.